The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And over the next half hour, I will be reading to you from National Geographic Traveler and the New York Times. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. On today's Armchair Traveler, we continue with our eight-part series, Best of the World, 25 Trips to Take in 2020. And this is from the final issue of National Geographic Traveler, the December 2019, January 2020 issue. And already we have visited eight of the sites, our most recent being the Australian state of Tasmania. And today we take snapshot visits to five more sites, which means we will have covered more than half of the 25 locations in our series. And our first stop is great for those who like wild things and adventure. It's Zakuma National Park in Chad. So let's begin the journey. And why go now? Well, support an African elephant haven. Home to a rapidly growing African elephant population, some 559 in 2019, and 1,000 expected by 2024, Zakuma National Park is an under-the-radar African safari destination. The park's location in southeastern Chad, one of the world's least visited countries, makes Zakuma a best-kept secret, one worth sharing to help ensure its continued success. Poaching previously had rendered the park nearly a war zone, with 90% of the wild elephants killed. Funding from the European Union and the 2010 decision to transfer park management to the public-private conservation organization African Parks has brought back life to the region. In addition to its population of pachyderms, Zakuma is a playground for more than 10,000 buffalo and about 1,000 Kordofan giraffes. Among other wild things at home, here are nearly 400 species of birds, as well as cheetahs, leopards, and servals. And the best time to go, they say, is March through April. And how to go? Well, you can stay at an eight-tent camp nomad, which opens mid-December to mid-April, or the more affordable Camp Tinga. That's a 20-rendezvous round hut camp open mid-November to May. More information about all that at africanparks.org. That's africanparks.org. Well, next, we're going to visit Telk, Czechia, a great city if you like cool castles. So why go now? Become charmed by a fairy tale setting. With resplendent Italian Renaissance architecture, it's no wonder the southern Czechia or Czech Republic town of Telk is sometimes called the Czech Florence. Positioned midway between Prague to the north and Vienna to the south, the storybook town got its official start in the 14th century as a crossroads on the well-trodden trading routes among Bohemia, Moravia, and Austria. International travelers to Czechia typically tend to flock to the capital city, Prague, and the historic town of Český Krumlov in Bohemia, but you're more likely to meet Czech travelers if you visit Tuk on the border between Moravia and Bohemia. Stone walls and a system of man-made fish ponds help protect Tuk's historic center, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The triangular marketplace is bordered by a rainbow of pastel-hued burger houses, originally constructed from wood and rebuilt with stone after fire decimated the town in 1530. From the square, walk in the Telk Chateau. The former Gothic castle was transformed into a Renaissance jewel by nobleman Zacharias of Redetz and his wife Katharina, whose Italian taste inspired Telk's ornate style. And suggested you visit sometime between May and September, the best time, they say. And you can go by touring the Telk Castle to see the sumptuous stucco chapel, built around 1580, as the final resting place of Zacharias and Katharina Zamek-Telk.zz/en gives you more information online. Zamek, Z-A-M-E-K, Zamek. /telk.cz/en for more information online. Well, If legendary pharaohs interest you, then you'll want to check out the culture of Abu Simbel in Egypt. And this is the home of legendary pharaohs. And so why go now? Well, you can enjoy a private audience with Ramesses II. Tourism to Egypt is rebounding from its steep decline in the wake of the 2011 Arab Spring Revolution. However, the feeling of having a destination to yourself can still be found at Abu Simbel, deep in the south of Egypt near the border with Sudan. Originally cut into a rock cliff by the Egyptian pharaoh Ramesses II, sometime around 1303 through 1213 BC, the temples at Abu Simbel are at once archaeological treasures and marvels of modern engineering. Buried by sand for millennia, the towering landmarks were unearthed by archaeologists in 1813 and saved from rising waters of Lake Nasser, the gigantic reservoir created by the damming of the mighty Nile at Aswan. By a monumental 5-year relocation effort launched by the Egyptian government and UNESCO in 1960. Before vast areas were flooded, the temples were meticulously disassembled, moved, and reconstructed on higher ground, 200 feet above the cliff. Together with several additional Nubian monuments, the temple complex was named a World Heritage Site in 1979. Wander from one dimly lit chamber to another through the 98-foot-tall Great Temple guarded by four gigantic figures of Ramesses II. Stand awestruck in front of images of the pharaoh and Nefertari, his beloved queen, engraved on the walls more than 3,000 years ago. And take your time. Chances are a few people will be jostling for your view. And they say the best time to go is February through March. And how to go? Well, a good way to experience Abu Simbel is part of a Nile cruise. Outfitters cruising the river include National Geographic Expeditions, Oberol, which is spelled O-B-E-R-O-L, or I'm sorry, Oberoi, excuse me, O-B-E-R-O-I, and Abercrombie and Kent. Well, we're going to head back to another city now, Fort Kochi, India, a great place to visit if you like contemporary art. And why go now? Well, admire aesthetic trends in the tropics. And let's take a look. The oldest European settlement in India is gaining notice as a buzzing new arts hub. Seaside Kochi, located in Kerala Estate in southwestern Malabar coast, was founded in 1500 by Portugal, first in a parade of colonial powers, Holland and England followed, to rule the tropical port city. The multi-layered colonial past is most present in historic Fort Kochi, the waterfront district where several Dutch and British-era properties house galleries and cafes. The 4-month-long Kochi Mizuras Biennale is the longest event of its kind in South Asia. Launched in 2012, the Biennale showcases contemporary international, Indian, and cross-cultural visual art and experiences, such as a Singaporean Indian artist and writer, Shubhaibai Rao's 2018 The Pelagic Tracks, a multifaceted deep dive into a world where books are the most prized commodity. Rao is curator of the 5th Biennale, set up to run from December 12, 2020 to April 10, 2021. Among the likely Biennale venues are David Bungalow, built about 1695 by the Dutch East India Company, and the 1867 Aspinwall House, a former British trading company compound. Events also are staged in nearby Mattancherry, home to Kochi's centuries-old Jewish quarter. And the best time to go is December through April. And how to go? You can visit galleries and attend a performance of Kathakali, the classical dance drama of Kerala, on National Geographic's 7-day South India Explore Kerala trip. And Kerala, by the way, is K-E-R-A-L-A. You might want to say Kerala, but it's Kerala. They give it a little more emphasis on that first part. And you can also check this out at natgeoexpeditions.com/explorer. natgeoexpeditions.com/explorer. Well, our fifth and final stop in our 5-part series is going to be the National Blue Trail in Hungary. Great for nature lovers who like amazing ambles. Yep, ambles. We'll let you figure that one out as we go. Well, why go now? Take a hike on a lesser-known European path, obviously slowing things down, right? Despite its lack of soaring peaks, the highest is 3,327-foot Mount Kikis, or Keeks, as they say in Hungary. Hungary is a dream hiking destination thanks to the country's National Blue Trail, meandering about 700 miles from Aratko Mountain on the western border with Austria to the northeastern village of Holahatsa near Slovakia. The Blue Trail, or Kutura in Hungarian, is a wonderful diverse web of paths labeled with white and blue striped waymarkers. Originating in 1938 and recognized as Europe's first long-distance trail, it's part of the nearly 6,500-mile European long-distance walking route E4, which begins in Spain and ends with ferry connections in Cyprus. So while you could use the Blue Trail as a launch pad for an epic cross-European trek, Hungary's historic route is best experienced as a singular destination. Whether for a day hike or a multi-night trek, there's a Blue Trail route fine-tailored to fit most interest. Paths climb gentle hills, traverse thick forests and extinct volcanoes, lead to mountain vistas and through medieval cities, and pass resorts on western Hungary's nearly 50-mile-long Lake Balaton. Among the many cultural detours are World Heritage sites such as the old village of Hodkoko and the Buda Castle Quarter in Budapest. Well, best time they say to go is August through September, and how to go? Get a Blue Trail passport to earn stamps at checkpoints along the route. Collect all 147 stamps and receive a coveted Blue Trail badge, or complete one of the three stretches awarding section hike badges. And get more online at ketura.hu/CL. MLAP.html. That's Ketura, KEKTURA, Ketura.hu, and that stands for Hungary, /CLMLAP.html. So lots of fun there on that particular trek. And next time on Armchair Traveler, we're going to undertake part 6 of our 8-part series in the Best of the World, 25 Trips to Take in 2020. And we're going to be taking some more snapshot tours of unique places, so we hope that you will join us. Lots of other things to see that you may not normally think about. You will recall that one of our snapshot visits today was a place called Fort Cochise, India. And it so happens that travel writer Sarah Kahn recently spent some time there, enabling her to produce her article 36 Hours in Cochise, India, featured in the December 19, 2019 issue of the New York Times. So we're going to return to Fort Cochise and take an extended visit thanks to Sarah Kahn. So are you ready for that? Kerala, as they say, is God's own country, a nod to its lush natural beauty, beguiling backwaters, and wealth of spices that have been the holy grail for generations of seafarers. But the catchy tourism slogan could also be a tribute to the various religious traditions that have thrived there, especially in the port city of Kochi, for thousands of years. Kerala's unique geography, hemmed in from the rest of India by the mountains to the east, but open to the world by the Arabian Sea to the west, meant the state in southwest India was a cosmopolitan melting pot for far-flung cultures. Hindus, Christians, Jews, and Muslims lived side by side and traded with the Arabs and Chinese long before the Portuguese fumbled their way over. It was Kerala that Columbus was after in 1492 when he found himself in the Bahamas instead and established the first European settlement in India at Cochin in 1500, kicking off successive waves of colonization by the Portuguese, Dutch, and British. Today, Kochi, as Cochin has been renamed, is a popular cruise ship stop and layover for travelers en route to houseboats that cruise through the idyllic backwaters of nearby Alappoza. But its complex history merits a longer stay. Spend a weekend exploring historic Fort Cochise, whose narrow lanes are lined with buildings that are legacy to thousands of years of cultural intermingling. And if you're in the area between December 2020 and March 2021, you won't want to miss the Cochise Mazuris Biennale, one of the world's most exciting contemporary art events, which we touched on earlier. Like much of India, Kochi has seen protests in recent days against a new citizenship law that many view as discriminatory. While the protest and police response have involved violence in some parts of the country, Kochi's protests have not affected areas frequented by tourists. Well, next, Sarah is going to give us a timeline of our 36 hours in Kochi, India. Hers began on a Friday at 2 p.m., and she begins by taking a stroll. Fort Kochi is a bit of a misnomer. The original Portuguese fort no longer stands. The name now refers to Kochi's historic section. A walk through the quarter helps uncover the layers of influences that have left their mark here. Start near Chinese fishing nets strung across bamboo and teak poles. They have been there in some form since the 1400s. While they now mostly exist for tourist photo ops, you can see how fishermen hauled their catch here for centuries. The cross Vasco da Gama Square, rather than cross Vasco da Gama Square, toward St. Francis Church, and that's one of the oldest European churches in India. Erected as a Catholic church by the Portuguese in 1503, it was rebuilt as a Protestant church by the Dutch before being consecrated as an Anglican church by the English. This is where Vasco da Gama was buried before his remains were sent back to Lisbon. Pause for a chai at the charmingly cluttered Teapot Cafe before carrying on to the whitewashed Santa Cruz Cathedral Basilica, then amble along streets lined with bright blue and yellow buildings dressed with terracotta roofs and stained glass windows and fringed with bougainvillea, en route to the Indo-Portuguese Museum, which houses relics and remnants from Kochi churches, Bibles, statues of Mary, and even a 16th-century teak altar. Admission is 40 rupees, and that's about 55 cents in our currency. And then the next place is 5 p.m. Drama and Dance. Kerala is synonymous with Kathakali, a classical dance form known for its dramatic stories of gods and demons in elaborate masks, headdresses, and makeup. For those unfamiliar with the art, the Kerala Kathakali Center offers a primer. The show begins with a demo at 5 p.m., during which performers explain how the makeup is applied, how the intricate movements are performed, and what the characters and the storylines are, followed by a captivating performance at 6 p.m. And the tickets to get in are 350 rupees, and that's just under $5 U.S. And number three, at 8 p.m., we have some fresh fish. Kerala's setting on the Malabar coast means seafood is a staple. You'll dine on some of the best in Fort Kochi at the Fort House, a 16-room hotel with a restaurant at the water's edge. Sop up the fish with green mango curry, and this is going to cost you about 420 rupees or $5.80, or the ginger garlic prawns, 450 rupees or about $6.20, with appams, fermented rice pancakes, or a paratha, a flaky flatbread. Dinner for two is around 1,500 rupees. Guys, that'll set you out 21 bucks. On Saturday, our fourth stop is at 9:30 a.m. at the Artsy Breakfast. Historic Kochi was once divided into two sections, Fort Kochi, where the Christians lived, and Mantancherry, which was primarily home to Jews, Hindus, and Muslims. Get going bright and early to explore Mantancherry, once a vibrant center of the spice trade. Start with breakfast at the Mocha Art Cafe, a 300-year-old spice warehouse. Try the appam with egg stew. That's 230 rupees, and it's going to set you back just over $3.20. Banana, apple, and Nutella pancakes are 200 to 250 rupees. That's between 275 and 345 an hour. Culture, or a keema cheese omelet, that's 270 rupees or $3.75, all very reasonably priced, I might add, and washed down with a mocha, 190 rupees or $2.60. When you're done, take a few minutes to check out the exhibits by local artists adorning the brick walls. Then number five at 10:30 is the Jewish History. Mocha Art Cafe is just steps away from the 16th century Paradisi Synagogue, the oldest active synagogue in the Commonwealth, with global influences in the form of blue hand-painted tiles from China, chandeliers from Belgium, and an oriental rug that was a gift from the Ethiopian Emperor Haile Selassie I. There are only a handful of practicing Jews remaining in Kochi, and tourists are needed for a full congregation. From there, head to Mantancherry Palace, also known as the Dutch Palace, though it was a gift from the Portuguese to the King of Cochin in 1555. It's an intriguing fusion of European and Indian styles and houses elaborate 16th-century temple-style murals of scenes from the Hindu Ramayana epic. Then explore the markets of Jewtown, lined with everything from perfume bottles to embroidered umbrellas to mounds of paint and brilliant shades of fuchsia and cobalt. Nearby are the Antiques Emporium Ethnic Passage, the contemporary design shop Via Kerala, and the fashion designer Joe Icarus Boutique. And then at 2 p.m., we take a leisurely lunch. And this is back in Fort Cochise. The Indian Oven Restaurant at the Cochin Club is a relaxing setting for a languid lunch. There's a quiet garden, windows open to the water, whimsical murals on the wall, and colorful cushions scattered across cane chairs. Pull one up and tuck into the Malabar Coast seafood dishes like a Kerala-style squid toast and karamine, palikattu, that's pearl spot fish prepared in banana leaf. Lunch for two is about 1,000 rupees, or about $13.75. Well, just before we get to the 24-hour mark in our first day, we're at 3:30 p.m. It's art afternoon, though the Kochi, Missouri's Biennale brings the world's art focus on Kochi every other year for 3 months at a stretch. There are a clutch of galleries worth visiting no matter what time of year in town. Stroll through the lanes of Fort Cochise with stops at David Hall Art Gallery, housed in an old Dutch house. Well, you'll find everything from exhibitions by local artists to book readings to Sufi devotional music and Kashi Art Gallery, a gallery cafe that supports emerging artists. And that night at 7 p.m., we're going to have some culinary innovations. You'll find a modern fine dining haven, amid the history at East Indies, a restaurant overlooking a pool at the Dutch colonial-inspired 8th Bastion Hotel. In a contemporary dining room, choose among interesting combinations and artful plating. Tiger prawns with ginger, chili, cumin, and coconut. That's about 900 rupees, or $12.40. Then we have coriander-laced chicken, Malay Perilan. That's about 700 rupees, or $8.05. $9.65. And then we have shrimp with ginger and garlic, 550 rupees or $7.60. And cream brulee French toast, 400 rupees or $5.50. So all that taking place in our first 24 hours and a couple hours thereafter. Next, we move on to Sunday in our visit. And at 9:30 a.m., we have an open-air breakfast. Two historic warehouses by the sea were joined to make the delightful Pepper House, an open-air cafe and gallery and design shop that's one of the main venues come Biennale time. The crowd is a mix of creative types and tourists, all converging at the handful of tables scattered around a grassy courtyard. It's a great spot for breakfast. Fuel up for the day with French toast with a jaggery, that's unrefined cane sugar, and fresh fruit. That's going to set you back $3.50 or 250 rupees. Then at 11 o'clock, we hop on board. Kochi has been nicknamed the Queen of the Arabian Sea, and the water is an intrinsic element of the city. You can book a tourist boat for a one-hour spin around the harbor, but for more local experience, take the public ferry. Tickets are just 4 rupees, and so that's not going to be much at all, just a few cents. And it's about a nickel, as a matter of fact. Aboard at the jetty off Calvathy Road, alongside commuters and local families, and whiz past some of the islands to make up the city of Kochi, Vaipin, Wellingdon, Valamarpatam, and Balgadi, before landing 20 minutes later at the bustling mainland part known as Ernakulam. There, take a quick stroll through the neatly manicured sea-facing Subhash Bose Park before heading back. In lodging, if you'd like to visit Kochi, here's some outlines. Opened in 2016, the Ginger House Museum Hotel is a plush oasis in the heart of Mantancherry. Situated above a sprawling antique shop and restaurant, each of the 9 rooms is done up in rich vintage embellishments, like 24-karat Art Deco tiles and a ceiling bedecked in teak wood framed mirrors. Doubles from 25,000 rupees. That's about $345 a night. Then the cherry yellow Fort Kochi has 27 rooms and a restored 18th century heritage house, just steps from the Chinese fishing nets and many of Fort Kochi's main attractions, and doubles go from 14,000 rupees or about $195 a night. Many of Fort Kochi's colonial-era houses have been converted to hotels and guest houses, and there are plenty of charming places to stay within striking distance of all the historic quarter's key attractions. Private rooms on Airbnb range anywhere from $15 to $100 per night. Wow. Lots of interesting things to see in Fort Kochi, and that was kind of my first visit there, too. I wasn't really aware of it until later. And some nice things there to think about, huh? Well, recently, members of the New York Times travel team posted a list of 52 places to go in 2020, I guess competing with National Geographic's editors. And you can find that list in the January 9th, 2020 issue of the New York Times. Travel editor Amy Bishop explained how they came up with their list. And it's called 52 Places to Go in 2020. And where would you go if you could go anywhere, is how they lead off this article. That's what I asked the Times travel team back in September at our kickoff lunch for the 2020 edition of our annual 52 Places to Go list. Almost 4 months of research, discussion, and debate followed. We came down to these 52 destinations that we hope will inspire, delight, and motivate you to explore the world. And I will say we will touch on many of these locations in future episodes of Armchair Traveler, so we hope that you'll enjoy these. And so how did they choose the 52 places? Well, each place has to answer the question, why now? Tokyo, a great city in any year, is hosting the Summer Olympics in 2020, so it's on our list. The Bahamas, always a pleasure, needs support from tourists in the wake of 2019's Hurricane Dorian, also on the list. Sustainability was a major theme. A number of places are leading the way in sustainable travel. Western Sweden, we're looking at you, or are controlling visitor numbers to avoid over-tourism. Uganda limits the number of gorilla trekking permits for its famed Bawindi Forest. We, too, are taking steps to mitigate our impact, like committing to buying carbon offsets for our staff plane travel. We also won't be sending out 52 Places Traveler this year, though we will report from many of our chosen locations. And so was the past. The pull of history was the other big theme for this year's list. Egypt plans to open its massive Grand Egyptian Museum in 2020, making thousands of archaeological objects newly visible. And the German town of Oberammergau is putting on its once-a-decade passion play, a nearly 400-year-old tradition. And what is the number one place? Washington, D.C., which we know might surprise some, but the reasons are plenty. What better year than 2020 to revisit the ideals on which the United States was founded and the fact that Washington belongs to everyone? Share and discuss the list with your adventurous friends and follow us on Instagram, and you can do that at NY Times Travel, and you can do some planning of your own. Again, you'll find the full list at NY Times Travel. And I wish you a very happy journey, signed Amy Bishop. So there you go. And by the way, the writer for 52 Places in 2019 is also going to be featured in some future episodes of Armchair Traveler. We have some of his work, so we hope that you'll stay tuned for that. So lots of things happening there. Let's take a quick look back home as we take a look at the January-February issue of AAA Go Magazine and return to our winter road trip planner on January the 26th in Winston-Salem, the UNC School of the Arts Mozart Birthday Concert. You're invited to attend a birthday celebration by the UNC SA's faculty. You can join them as they present a program of chamber music by the composer Mozart. It's all free. If you want to find out more information, just check it out at visitwinstonsalem.com/events. And here in Raleigh on January the 25th, they had the annual African-American Cultural Celebration celebrating Black History Month at the North Carolina Museum of History. Lots of good things happening. Well, that's it for today's episode of Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it. You'll be listening next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and reminding you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions and comments may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.